Hey folks, you're listening to Blammo. It's Jeremy Kirkland. How you doing? We got a new season of Blammo, right? Isn't that great? I don't know. First off, do we even care about new seasons anymore? I feel like it just kind of goes onward, right? Like, what am I going to do? This is season 26. Like, I mean, no, this is season like 14. Well, I don't know. Is this podcast going to turn into Law and Order? You know, it's just nonstop. Whatever. Doesn't matter. How are we all doing? if I can process for a moment, look, I'm a clothing fan. As we all know, we all talk about, you know, sustainability and, you know, what we want out of a clothing brand in this kind of modern day and age. And people will vent and they'll be like, man, you know, I wish brands were kind of more like the old days or remember when. And look, I'll be honest, I've caught myself and others being like, I think we're all just happier being annoyed. It's kind of a nostalgia thing in general, where it's just like, it's easier to just, you know, complain about the current state of things and say they were better another time, you know, than really enjoy how good things are now. Like, is it more fun to wax poetic and versus learn new things? Whatever. I'm not trying to preach here. Maybe I am. But I am far more impressed with many, many menswear brands now more than ever. And one of them is Percival, founded by Christopher Gove, and who's my guest this week? There you go. But they're based out of Britain. They kind of nail, I think, the aesthetic of where we are right now in between this sort of formal and casual, you know, because they do casual, they do the elevated basics, they got new suits, but they're a modern brand and they've done things really, really well. And so I'm pleased to talk with Christopher Gove from Percival. We get into it. We chat their recent pop-up in New York, getting basics right. Fake hardcore fans, you know they're out there. The influencer world, we got some spicy takes, getting fits off in the pickup line, commercial versus creative, and the multi-year plan. New season of Blammo. Here we go. What'd you have for breakfast?
I had a half English.
Okay, all right.
Which is the calorie watching man's full English.
Okay. I used to have that. I would go full English when I would be chilling in Wandsworth.
Oh, you have some UK-based connections.
Yeah, I worked for the Beggars Group for 5 years, 6 years.
Oh, no way. Oh, in Southwest. Right, cool. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was... Okay, nice.
I didn't know shit for like British vibes or anything. I think my first time coming to the UK was when I worked there.
Well, so you turned up cold and were, what, potentially aghast at our cuisine levels?
No, actually, if I could, I would absolutely move my entire family and just live out of the UK for sure, easily, hands down.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. I mean, the cultural comparison's always interesting. Obviously, we were in New York last October. We had that pop-up shop on Spring. Yeah, it was Spring Street, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I love going to New York. It's an absolutely bonkers ecosystem of people who are crucially like earning loads of money, like barmen. Mm-hmm. Are there earning like $90,000?
Oh yeah,
and then we're just so used to the UK where everyone's like worried about finances, the invasion, because obviously it's a bit closer to us. We've got the old lulzy energy crisis, which people are loving that. We have a series of sort of insane career-driven politicians who are just amazing to witness, and so consequently our economy's like not absolutely loving it, and so you know. You hear all these things about America, right? Like the things that you hear growing up in the 90s, like land of opportunity, everyone's an opportunist, people want people to do well. It's just, and it's things I know, I've been to the US 1,000 times, but being in our climate for the past 18 months and just going there, being like, okay, got to do the pop-up shop. I know it's going to be graft. New York will be fun, but I'm going to come back knackered. As soon as we got there, set up the shop, people are poking their head in, they're like, hey man, what do you do? Da-da-da. And like, I was like, oh my God, this energy I love. I loved the energy. Everyone wanted to know what we were about. The fact that it was new to a lot of people. They loved getting involved and hearing about it. But dude, they were just buying things.
Yeah.
So this guy had, he was like, I got my first interview next week.
Good American accent, by the way.
What do you think?
That's fantastic.
I pride myself on a variety of accents. Let's see how many we can get through without offending, obviously. he bought a pair of loafers. We did this collab with Chris at Blackstock and Weber.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing guy. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Chris. But so he did a pair of loafers for us that had like football studs on, like football spikes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They were just a one-off, because then we had an amazing pair. We had like 20 pairs that we were selling. And this kid just bought a pair of loafers for like $400, mm-hmm. bought a jacket for $500. I was just mind blown. And this is day one. And he's like 21. And this is just, he's buying it to go to an interview. And I was so unused to that. Here, the guy comes in, even a fan of the brand, 3-4 times, browses around, waits for payday. And I was like, man, the economic ecosystem here around fashion is consumed totally differently on all levels, from like fast through to like what is a considered purchase. You know, we're not premium or luxury, but it's still, you know, it's a $500 jacket. Got to think about that. But the guys were just like, I'll take two. This one lad just took two jackets and I swear they didn't even fit. But hey, I loved it. I loved New York when I went. Little and often, I think, is the thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny that that's the impression you have of kind of like the New York shopper. Because I feel like that stuff happens when you're new, right? Okay. If you're new, people want the new thing. And I do think that when you're in that area, because you guys were basically kind of like Soho, Noita area.
Yeah, that's right.
There's this vibe of, I don't know, especially with kind of like this, the younger guys, I think we're kind of in the sweet spot now where, and when I say younger, I mean like, I don't know, elder Gen Z, if that's a thing. I don't know. But like, you know, guys in their 20s, you know, early 30s, and I guess it's millennial stuff too, but there's this understanding of craft and cost and pricing, into which, you know, I remember when I worked at the Armory in New York,
yeah,
you'd have old dudes come in that were just totally loaded. You know, their car and driver would be outside, and they'd walk in and they'd be like, wow, $600 for a pair of shoes? Oof. And I'm like, dude, your car is $500,000 outside. And you have a person who's driving it. Like,
yeah, you spent money just idling out there.
Exactly. And so you're like, that's kind of weird. And I feel like some of that mindset, I mean, of course you would have other guys that would come in and basically just like ask if they could shut the store down and just bring their family in and shop. But the average person like didn't really get it of like the older sort of rich guy. But I feel like the new sort of younger guy gets it, where it's like, yeah, shoes are $400 or $500. A jacket is like $500 to $1,000. A shirt is $200, $300. And it's, I think the younger guys get it more now than ever.
I think so. I think there's two things there. One is that I think brand loyalty is so different now.
Yeah.
I mean, there was this huge report came out, might be Business of Fashion, about how people now are no longer just insanely loyal to one brand. They look to every single brand to give them what they need.
Yeah.
So you curate themselves across a series of things and actually a series of price points. And I think, I mean, are you a millennial like me?
Yeah, I'm 38.
Okay, I'm 40. So okay. Like we're like graying out the other end.
Yeah.
But growing up in like the 90s and noughties and consuming clothes, it was completely different. I think like not to be like the remember when, but I remember in the way that films would portray demographic segments of people, like goths, skaters, preppy, like it was so funny. And I was like clearly defined. And the older you got, you were just loyal to the brands. And even when I started Percival 10 years ago, even when it was just like me doing a side hustle, people were like, oh, you're like YMC and Oliver Spencer and Folk. Cool.
Oof.
And that was like the cohort of brands that I was just bonk in, because it was like contemporary men's and it was independent. And I used fabric from Japan. And so like you'd get, and you will remember this, like that might, you know, people would come in with like the Red Wing boot core.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And that was the menswear crowd.
Yeah.
Like, do you have a selvage Japanese denim jacket? And do you have Red Wings? That was your core. And menswear didn't fall outside of that. And then down the road, people just queued for Supreme. And then they were just like, those people would never cross-pollinate ever.
Yeah.
And as people of that age, we've for the past 10, 15 years, like having seen all sides, have to come back around to putting it all together and understanding that actually curate your style from like a myriad of different brands, because you're not defined by a thing. And the understanding of sustainability, we've had to learn later.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people 15 years younger than us have just grown up with everything.
Yeah.
Consuming it when they want, how they want, allowed to pick and choose. And I think for the first time, like looking at all the Paris fashion stuff that's coming out, it's like super 90s. It's like 90s dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the first time I'm like, wow, I genuinely remember that the first time. Like I was a teenager. I remember that. That's how, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm just saying I'm old as hell, but it's just Gen Z seem to get it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're totally right with that, because, you know, also now it's like a death rattle to wear head to toe in one brand. Like if you walk in to any place, you're hanging out with your friends and you're head to toe, whatever, coolest brand ever, LV, whatever you want to say. And people are like, okay, so you're just rich, you know?
Full kit wanker.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you have that stuff, it's not cool at all. Now it's got to be like, okay, I have, you know, this jacket or this thing is vintage or this, you know, and it's weird now, especially with people, you know, I came across this when people were like, oh, I'm trying to get some Levi's Silver Tab.
Yeah.
And I was like, those were the jeans that I had that I got at JCPenney and they, and I was like, not cool enough because everyone was wearing Diesel. And so like, why would I ever want Silver Tab? You know, I mean, I'll wear 501s, I'll wear that stuff. But even then I was just like, no man, Silver Tab's whack. Like that was a lesser brand. That was like, not as good. It's like all of a sudden people want to collect Chaps, you know, Ralph Lauren Chaps. Mm. And it's just like, dude, that was the broke boy thing. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's really switching your mindset and being super open. And I can be quite closed in exactly the same way. I have to really force myself to be open creatively. I'm like, oh, actually, literally anything goes. And I see street style coming out of London a lot. And it's like, if you haven't curated or like spent hours mining or finding or searching for that one vintage piece you were looking for, then you've just bought it all off the rack. And it's like, sorry, you have nothing's vintage. Like then you're not individual at all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, 10 years ago, I remember thrifting super hard in the first round of indie sleaze, maybe when I first moved to London, must have been like 2008. We're talking about Strokes, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like Winkle picker brogues, tight jeans. Like we all would have remembered that. But that's when everyone was thrifting so hard. And you had like little 70s shirts and Parker jackets as well.
Yeah.
And thrifting just went. It just wasn't a thing for so long. And now it's back so hard. I think it's tied to sustainability and owning the clothing life cycle, which is an amazing part of it. But for the cool kid, it's like, wait, you haven't thrifted. What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with things like people being more comfortable buying stuff on, you know, Depop or online or, you know, I mean, any of that stuff. Like I remember when my first time I came out to London was in 2008. And the folks at the XL office, so it was like Caius, Pawson, and they were like, oh, you should go down here and get yourself like a vintage barber. And I was like, why the fuck would I want vintage? Like these things.
I'll just buy one.
Yeah.
I was like, just buy a new one. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I was like, this smells like an old, you know, like some old boot. Like I don't want this. Mm. And in my head, I was like, oh, they're sizing me up because they feel like I can't flex with them. Like I don't have the money. Mm. You know, and it immediately, I mean, of course, you know, this is like much younger, you know, dumb Jeremy. And I was like, no, 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 I want to look like Pete Doherty. And they were like, fuck, no, you don't want to be Pete Doherty. And I was like, yeah, 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 I do. Yeah. And they're like, no, 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 no. They're like, what, you're not going to get wellies or any of these things? Like, no, no, no. They're like, go get the vintage barber. And I got it. And I was like, okay, I feel like I'm cool. But at the same time, it was funny because I was like, I feel like I should just go buy a new one. And so I got it. I took it back to my hotel. I put it away. And then I went down the street and bought like a new one, like a quilted one.
Yeah.
So because I was like, well, you know, they got to know that I can afford the new one anyway. And it was just, it was so stupid, but like thinking like that now, you know, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think there was just no kudos in, like, I remember buying my first vintage barber. And I remember a good friend of mine who'd been in London already for a couple of years being like, right, dude, you're just really dressing like you're from a county, like real county dressing. Like,
where are you from originally?
Southampton.
Okay.
So South Coast,
yeah,
just
yeah.
like an hour and a half out of London, right? And my parents live in Brighton. So Brighton, Southampton. So good areas, coastal areas, but you're southern.
Beautiful.
Like a proper southerner.
Yeah.
Really lovely coast. Get to London, I'm just dressed like head to toe, just like crap pop punk skate. Just because, I don't know, it was just like a phase. I remember going to uni and I went to an art uni in Bristol and then I studied in Hong Kong because I was bored of the UK. And I just remember like going through phases and trying different stuff. And I was like, do you know what? This summer, I'm going to be a skater. Don't you worry. Prep stuff goes in, bin, thrifted Hong Kong stuff, and amazing stuff that I probably threw away.
Yeah.
I've gone full skate and I've turned up and my friend's like, oh my God, we've got to go Camden Market, which is now it's like, you just wouldn't go there. And Camden Market's just like famous for those sort of nefarious characters and also like bleach flicked onto like pretty poorly made jeans.
Uh-huh.
But crucially, there was an area that was just doing vintage brogues, women's jeans, that they got off the back of a truck and put men's sizing in. Old, like old Armalux stripe kind of.
Yeah, like Breton stripe.
Yeah, Breton stripe, Armalux, Breton stripe, but like, ones that are genuinely for sailors, not like propagated now for like contemporary men's and then old barbers. And he was like, dude, this is your uniform. You get your brogues from that guy. You get your women's jeans from that guy. Your Armalux stripes there. And then I came away with a navy barber. And in like a day, I'd switched. And I was like, right, when's the new Strokes album coming out? And it's just like, but I feel like you have to go through all of those different, you know, take on all those roles. I feel like if people grow up and say that they were just sort of into these different fashion brands and curating themselves from a young age, I don't believe it. You just there's so much pressure to follow trends, and that's exactly what I was doing.
No, I totally agree, and I think now people lean on that. Like I said this on, I don't remember where, but like all these people that talk about how they grew up loving hardcore and being into hardcore, I think maybe only 2% of them are telling the truth, because there's no way to check the receipts on that stuff. And I think the majority of all these like subcultures that people said that they loved, where it's like, you were aware of it, but you weren't really into it. Like,
oh, no way. No way.
Yeah.
Like, I swear I had a Linkin Park hoodie, which now, you know, would go for tons on the Vinted if I or Depop, you know, an OG from like 2002. But yeah, I think just owning how crap you may have been is part of the journey to like understanding everything.
Yeah.
Like I remember discovering that Carhartt was a genuine workwear brand, not Whip, which is the European sort of subsidiary that they bought the license and it does its own thing. It's amazing. I've got some family that weirdly live in Montana.
Okay.
And which is like, and every American I speak to and I say that, they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense, but that's cool.
It's just like, yeah, part of my mum's side of the family, they moved there whatever 50 years ago and they still live there. That's whatever, you know, you just don't talk about religion or politics, fine.
Sure.
But going into the thrift stores there and just seeing like amazing Pendleton blankets, amazing like Carhartt.
So you went and visited?
Like, yeah, I've been a few times.
Okay.
Like it's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's an amazing, beautiful place. You know, everyone has their problems. But the vintage stores there, I was like, oh my God, if I could bring this back, the money I could make on these like Pendleton blankets for like $7 that are just 50 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an absolute mind blow.
It's so weird. I mean, to go on the Percival stuff, like, do you think now when you design collections and you guys are working with the stuff that you're doing, obviously when people make lookbooks from any brand now, they're doing head to toe of that brand, right? You're, you know, 316 does head to toe 316, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Love 316.
But no one, I mean, I think it's pretty rare to see someone wearing head to toe in any one brand anymore. So like knowing that your customer will probably never do that. How does that affect your design?
So I think like about 2 years ago, a year and a half, I really felt like not trying to bring in specific fashion stuff all the time that would wear for a season or two and be so specific that it would be known that you'd want to switch it out. Like I love application. I'm from like a craft background, so I love embroidery, screen print. I used to have two studios that used to do that kind of stuff. So for what that comes out a lot in garments that end up looking quite specific for a season, which a lot of brands do. I did a lot of work internally on trying to get a selection of basics right that someone, a tier of customer, could just buy into and that could cut in with the range.
Yeah.
I kind of say cut in with the range because it is like, for example, there's a Levi's 615 orange tab, like you said, from the 90s that was like the dumb fashion jean of the 90s.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
there's like thousands of them still on eBay, but I'm wearing them right now and it's just a perfect straight leg and they're like 15 quid on eBay. And so it's like, okay, that's the jean that can cut in with all this amazing embroidery or this like an interesting custom wool or this fleece jacquard that I've done. But we just need that nice jean because that jean can go throughout and actually crucially go with a different brand as well. So that ideology, it's called Auxiliary, is how I branded it in my mind and ended up branding the sub-range that, because it's like, what's your backup bit that can cut in with every piece? So we've got just a standard flat wash jean coming out. And it's not like the 316, like, you know, your denim, which they are perfect at. I love that brand. It's just like, this is the jean you don't think about. You put it on, you put it with anything. And the same with a straight leg stay pressed trouser. The same with like a really heavyweight organic cotton fisherman's knit. The same with a full wool navy fleece. So there's now about 30% of the range that I'm just like, you almost don't need to know. It's not really branded in any way. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I've put loads of effort into sourcing everything the best way I can, making it the best way I can. And if you know, you know, when you just wear it. And so I wanted those things to last for at least minimum 2-3 years for people, because I start to have this itch as well about, if I'm designing things that are so specific all the time, they're going to come and they're going to go. And then I just feel genuinely bad about that, even though we do make stuff well and we do have to charge for it. It's made in great factories, but like, if it's a very sort of like Bodhi, like one shirt from Bodhi,
yeah,
two years later, you know, that's that Bodhi shirt from 2 years ago, and then you're like, can I even wear that?
Yeah.
So is that different to fast fashion? You know, I'm going to start some massive thing now, people are going to hate on me, but trying to think about ways where clothes can last, can it last for longer, even visually. So yeah, that to solve that look problem, you have some seasonal looks that you can really hang the press off, mm-hmm. hang the wholesale off. But then is there some core bits that can just cut through? And, you know, because not every guy wants that crazy fleece either. That's the other thing.
Yeah. I mean, I thank you for acknowledging that, because I think it's pretty rare, into which, you know, a lot of these brands that, you know, we talk about or mention or anything, most of them are carried by their, you know, basics, for lack of a better term, where it's like, yeah, the hoodies, the t-shirt, the jeans, the crew neck sweaters, the whatever. And yeah, because I mean, you can't, I mean, you're right. Like anything Bodhi, I don't know, anything Bodhi, I'll just hate on Bodhi.
Yeah. Anything.
I don't know. It's pretty dated after a while. So you have to find something else to, I don't know. I don't think you're going to see the regular dude wearing that and keeping it. They're going to get it and they'll be wealthy enough to put it somewhere so it can sit for 5 to 10 years, and then they'll bust it out. And people are like, oh, I remember that. That's cool. Thanks for the trip down memory lane, as they all wear a standard crew neck sweater or a hoodie. I mean, seriously, I look at what I actually buy. And this year I wrote down, I was like, okay, what did I purchase? And all the stuff I purchased are like, you know, higher rise trousers, a crew neck sweater, a sport coat, you know, loafers, nothing. Even what I'm wearing right now, I won't mention, you know, on it. Like, that was a gift. It's great, but there's no way that I'm going to wear this for years and years. It's too loud.
Yeah, you've got two seasons, two winters maybe at best.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go in the back of your, well, actually, you've just done a big sale out, haven't you? You've cleaned out recently.
Yeah, and I'm in the process of getting rid of even more. I have two more bags of clothes that are just, I mean, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
But isn't it addictive though? Like, I don't know. Or you're a hoarder though, but I've only just started using like resale platforms, and I'm so addicted. I mean, I own an e-com business and I sell stuff, right?
Right.
So it shouldn't be news to me. But I was putting stuff up and selling. I was like, to my wife, I was like, babe, I'm making money here. And she was like, yeah, dude, that's your job you do anyway. You can't have a side hustle that's your main job.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I increasingly own less and less stuff that isn't Percival, just because I wear trial it or whatever. But I've got an amazing R Legacy lambskin zip shirt that I bought when I went to LA, must have been 8 years ago. And this was like when R Legacy was just a bit different to it is now, you know, it kind of evolved. I think people forget what R Legacy was compared to now. You know, lovely guys, amazing brand. What they've done is like the holy grail of like commercial versus conceptual, and still ubiquitous enough that people are like, I want R Legacy. And I bought this shirt. I mean, God knows how I fit in it. It's so skinny. I like kind of get my arm in it. I don't know what I was thinking. But I slapped that on Vinted. I was like, yeah, R Legacy, that's going to go. And Sif was just got my phone. My wife, she just deleted it. She was like, you stop selling everything. Like that R Legacy jacket is amazing. It's like from 10 years ago. It's going to be worth so much money. Just keep it. Why are you selling stuff? So yeah, I just got addicted to selling. I think I'm addicted to selling things, man.
Well, I think it's also just the changeover. And I think that's one thing you can educate people all the time about, you know, sustainability, but people in a way want a wardrobe change or some sort of thing that's within their control psychologically that they can change and they can alter at will to feel better about things that what they can't, you know? And so clothes are the perfect medium for that. And so no matter how much we educate folks on, it's like, no, but you need to be sustainable or this is wasteful or this or that. It's like, it doesn't matter because people are going to continue to want new things, and that will help them escape the things that they can't. And like, I admit it, because I'm like, well, fuck, like I hate all my clothes. And it's like, well, really all these clothes are great and someday I'll like them again. But at the same time, I'm like, no, move on, you know? And then of course I'll buy it back. I literally got rid of two sport coats that were blue and they were nice, You know, I had a cashmere one that was really, really nice from a British tailor. And then I had another one that was from these, you know, Italian dudes. I just won't name any names purposely. And I immediately messaged the tailor that I would like to buy from, who cuts in a slightly different style, and was like, hey, I want to talk to you when you're here next. These are the things I want to order. And I wrote like Navy hopsack jacket, Navy cashmere jacket. And they were like, great. And I'm like, yeah, I literally just threw out thousands of dollars of stuff only to message someone asking if I can purchase it again. So,
but I think you, in deep down as well, you're a collector.
Yeah.
Like you love, you know, it's not Pokemon, but it's like clothes. And I'm the same. Like I love collecting and curating like your own style, like that challenge every morning. And like, what look am I going to put together? Although actually you did admit that you just like putting on the same stuff.
Well, but then, it's the same in a category, but it's definitely not the same. I mean, I could tell you 10,000 differences between this, you know, Solito jacket and this whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, I want to dress like an extra in The Crown. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with me? But it's the truth.
I accidentally dressed like Princess Anne yesterday. I was just trying to have a smart day. I don't know if you ever do that, where you wake up with a bit more confidence. And you're like, do you know what? I'm going to fucking push it today, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with I'm going to put that light blue mohair crew on. I'm going to have a little Oxford collar poking out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to get the pleated trouser. And then I'll go downstairs. So I'm already dressed like fucking Harry Styles or something on tour. And then I go downstairs and like, I've got loafers. I've got the Blackstock and Weber. I've got my nice like GH Bass. And then I've also got like a boat shoe that's like some, what's it, a GH Bass collab boat shoe. And I'm toying between the three. Meanwhile, my kid's like late for school and missing like the early drop off breakfast. And she's like, my wife's like, they look the same. No one on the planet is going to look at your shoes and go, oh, he chose the GH Bass over the Blackstock and Weber today. But to me, it's everything.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that literally happened to me this morning. No shit. Like, so my kids get up. I spend more time getting dressed than they do. And it's no one gives a shit. I literally, and because I don't live in New York anymore, you know, I go there like once a month or whatever. I'm like, my runway is the fucking school drop off line. And guess what? Not a single person cares about what I'm wearing. And I roll up and I'm like, dude, I got this sick old vintage Gloverall. I got this, you know, I got this old, you know, tweed coat, you know, and all I do is I walk up and I say, have a good day, Harriet. Love you. And walk away. And no one even looks up. They're all in their cars or they're on their phones with their Under Armour and their big American flag Punisher shirts.
So is that what you have there?
What?
As the dad, well, we discussed this a lot, the drop-off dad outfit.
Yeah.
And it's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. So like I live in Essex, which is like your equivalent of where you are.
Yeah.
But I can get the tube in half an hour. I'm not sure if you can. But the dad's where I am, right? So I do the same. I pull up in the gear. I drop her off.
Yeah.
But they're not on their phones because there's not that. They're just looking at me like, oh, the fuck is this absolute plonker turning up in like my baby blue mohair? And like this morning, like, and when Freya says goodbye, she goes, bye, Daddy. I love how soft your jumper is or something. Like, she'll always comment on it because she knows Percival. She's starting to understand what it is. Mm-hmm. But the dad uniform where I am is like golf core, probably. So it's like a light blue nylon zip neck.
Yep.
But the zip is like zip right up high. And then there'll be like a training short as if they're potentially about to do a job that involves exercise. Mm-hmm. Which I can't believe is true based on their physiology. I'll say no more.
Yep.
And then a trainer. And the trainer can either vary from like some insane Nike Dunk collab trainer, which they're like hopping over puddles because they don't want to get messed up, or just like real fucking On running.
Oh God, I can't stand On. Can't stand it. Sorry, On. Anyone, I'll just be honest. I think On is the fucking worst. It's the worst brand on the face of the earth. The logos are bad. Everything about it is bad. I'm sorry.
What I'd say is it's so admirable. How have they done it? I'm like, what is source? Well, Federer. But what source have you used to make every dad on the planet wear that? But then, and then the fashion dad wears a Fear of God Essentials hoodie.
Yeah.
And there's like, Fear of God Essentials hoodie. Like, I cannot move in Essex without being like seeing that Fear of God Essentials.
Okay, so let's unpack this. I do want to talk more about Percival, but I think this is also really interesting. Wait, hold on a second. Okay, before you send that DM or text that friend, I know what you're thinking. You're ready to buy your first serious watch. Or in other cases, maybe your fourth or your fifth. But look, man, it's hard out there. It really is. From this dealer or that store that wants the purchase history or whatever. I mean, you're just, I don't know, you're almost ready to walk away from the whole game. But fear not, my friends. Check out Bezel. Bezel is the trusted marketplace for buying and selling your next luxury watch, with expert in-house authentication on every purchase. With over 18,000 watches listed right now, as of the time I'm recording this, from a mix of professional dealers to private sellers, you're just going to find what you're looking for. But wait, wait, I know. You're like, Jeremy, I'm sorry. They don't have that X Rolex or that insane Omega. Well, reach out to them. Bezel has a real team of real people. Just create an account and be connected with a private client advisor, and they will guide you through the entire process every step. Once you decide on your watch, it's overnighted to Bezel HQ, where their in-house team of experts authenticate it, and then it's on your way to you. If anything is amiss, the watch is not listed correctly, whatever it is, they'll let you know, the buyer know, and the offer to refund you or source you a new one at a similar price. That's pretty good, right? This has been part of the Bezel ethos since launch. I've even spoke to the founders about it. And now you can make an offer on a watch, buy it outright, or bid it at auction. Bezel is the highest rated watch marketplace out there. Even Trustpilot shows Bezel is 4.9 out of 5 stars with rave reviews. Okay, you're still on the fence? Dig into the Blammo feed yourself and listen to my chat with the Bezel co-founders and, well, see for yourself. But you got this. I believe in you. Visit getbezel.com and buy and sell your next luxury watch. That's getbezel.com. Getbezel.com. How does a brand like Fear of God blow up in their sub brand? You know, so like who are the dads that are seeing that, or the whatever older guys, are they seeing Fear of God? And they're like, oh, I'll just settle for essentials. Or is there a certain place that they're shopping that has it? Is there, I mean, it's Essence orders for Fear of God, I think was like $50 million. Like it's nuts.
I mean, I don't know. Again, it's an amazing, and that's that auxiliary thing that we were talking about with Percival, is what they've done with essentials. It's like, okay, we've created an amazing brand, kudos. So what's the entry level thing we can do? We'll brand it essentials. But it's just like a taupe or like a coffee colored matching set. Mm-hmm. And just people will go crazy for that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, how have you made taupe and the word essentials with like quite wide kerning? Mm-hmm. Like I used to be graphic design for years. So like, I'm always looking at like tracking and kerning. I'm like, the kerning on that is just too wide. Like I can't, dyslexics will struggle with the kerning.
You're right.
But I don't know how it's blown up. I think like, because you get like the End, like we have End, you know, really great multi-brand here, independent. It's opposite our store actually. And they carry some amazing stuff. Like the curation is great, I think, because they do from contemporary all the way to streetwear. And it is really like on it, but they carry essentials. So that's the entry level thing for the guy. The guy goes there.
It's got to be.
That's his entry level thing. He can buy into the culture without even thinking twice.
Yeah. I mean, it's because they're the people that I see that like will give me the head nods on like my watch or my jacket or whatever. They're wearing clothes like essentials that, and I mean, and I'm just, again, all honesty, like I don't want to be associated with it. Like, because in my head, I also know how they behave around their kids, around other stuff. And I see them like, I don't know, this is, you know, like being a parent or some sort of person that I don't want to be around, even political stuff that I'm just like, no, man, don't give me the head nod on your essentials shit, because you also like A, B, C, and D, which respectfully is not something that I want to, you know, be a part of. And I recognize the division and how absurdly pathetic that is. Like I will take the L on the closed-mindedness that I have, no pun intended, you know.
It's weird. Yeah, no, I get that. I think like the US in its positions ideologically, like your guy's turning up in the Punisher t-shirts.
Yeah.
Like, I just know that guy. I think, you know, this is like tarnished with a brush, but I feel like I know what their opinion is on a few things.
Yeah.
But listen, we're talking about white guys, so we can kind of say what we want, right? They've sucked for so many years, centuries, decades, millennia, white guys have sucked.
Yeah.
So I think we're fine. We're not maligning a small demographic.
Very true.
But if Punisher t-shirt turns up, I think I'm okay to probably not have the conversation. But there's a few guys, and the guys that really interest me, like in the dad cohort, are guys that have not really put any effort in. Because then I think, okay, you're my guy.
Because
I know I can convert you. And it's just something where you've grown up in life and you've grown up around people who don't care about style, who are just like purely functional, who you've never, your job doesn't mean you've had to ever consider it. And actually for me and for Percival, that is a huge captive audience because no one is beyond learning. I think if you learn to dress well or dress comfortably and elevate yourself, it can just make such a difference to you. Like one of my weird internal mantras is making Forest Green the new navy. Just because as a growth goal, it's such a wearable color.
Agreed.
Imagine if it's way more, you know, and I'm a realist, not an idealist. So I can't say like mustard, like I love mustard rust. I love cobalt blue. There's lots of, you know, I love a cornflower blue at the moment, but there's no money in getting people to wear that. And that I can like be crazy and try and design stuff with all my colors and textures and have a nice palette and an idea and concept it comes from. But ultimately, if I can get the navies dressing in forest and I can get the people who don't care dressing in the navy, then that is a captive audience. And so that was like a weird mantra I had when we released our linen suit 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Forest Green is now the best-selling linen suit we have over the summer. I have this issue with summer that men dress like teenagers. So I was like, how can we get men to not dress like teenagers? They just put on like tight white t-shirts and like goofy shorts or like Tommy Bahamas. I'm like, okay, they're making decisions at some point to put that on. Where do we intercept that decision and go, by the way, you can dress like fucking Don Johnson. You can dress like Tony Soprano. You can dress like...
Yeah.
So that's kind of my mission at the moment, to sort of get people who don't care to start caring because it empowers them so much.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. I mean, I carry myself differently whenever I'm wearing something, whatever, you know, even for the 10, 15 minutes I'm standing outside.
But yeah.
One thing I was curious about, so with Percival and your background, so you come from like an advertising background, graphic design, more of an understanding of that. And I think, and this is not a knock on Percival at all, but it's a very, in a good way, like approachable brand. And not that like, I feel like I can shop the brand, browse the brand, and I don't feel like the brand's talking down to me. You know what I mean? Where there's certain brands, you know, I'll pick on like Gucci, for example, where people are like, I'll never be cooler than that brand, or I'll never be as cool as that brand. And I feel like with Percival, there's stuff there that you're like, oh, I can enter this a little bit easier because I'm not like, the brand doesn't look down on me. And with like the advertising background that you have, like, was that intentional? Was that like, how did that come about?
I truly believe it's harder to make things commercial than make them cool. And people will always argue with me about that. Making something conceptual is the easiest thing on the planet because it's just something in your own head and you just got to get it out. Mm-hmm. Making people like that is really difficult. Making lots of people like one thing is really difficult. Like the Fear of God Essentials, like how have they done that with On? How have they done that?
Yeah.
Now, okay, it might just be tons of money at that point.
Possible.
And we don't have that. But I think like what I found early on in the early days of doing Percival, there's two iterations. The first one is like me just doing it as a side hustle, having a shop on Berwick Street, not having any money, trying to do wholesale, which doesn't make sense because you can't make any money from wholesale, no margin. You could go wait.
Yeah.
And then Liberty are like, not Liberty, who was it? Fennec, I think, 90-day terms or something. You're like, Jesus, I can't, how do I even feed myself?
Yeah.
But what I'd have in the store is guys would come in to the store back then, and that's the Red Wing guy, like the OG, like if you put Scenester in like an AI Mid Journey, it will still give you like a mustache dude with a fixed gear bike.
Yeah.
Like, which is so funny that like AI still thinks Scensters are like from 2007. But those guys would come in and they would really struggle to like let go of, and I'd say like, hey man, that looks great on you. And they'd like stiffen up or they would like their mate, they'd be like, oh, Darren, what do you think of this? And he'd be like, it's all right. And they just can't compliment each other. And then I'd get someone finally to the till and they'd go, mate, do you know what? I need to take a picture to see what my girlfriend thinks about it. And they'd have to get validation from their girlfriend before they even bought something. And that was about a year and a half of having that store until we closed it. And then I liquidated and restarted the brand and went full time and changed the business model and everything. But the one thing I took to the next stage, I was like, guys are fucking weird about it.
Yeah.
They can't just say, hey, dude, you look great. Mate, that looks fucking banging on you.
Yeah.
Because, and thankfully now, fast forward 8 years, I think it's really changed. And what's come with that is the casualization of the office. So like guys could hide in their suit. They could just go, oh, well, everyone wears a suit. They hide in the suit.
Yeah.
And then on the weekend, they didn't have the care. And that has now changed so much. And so my thing was, how can I get people to feel like they can just come into the shop and not worry about not knowing about menswear? And if they already know, how can I then give them more? No knock on any of these brands. And because I think, you know, what Amelie and Dora have done, you walk in that store now, though. I can't walk in it without feeling like someone's going to eye stab me.
Yeah.
Now, that store, what they've done is amazing. Don't at me anyone. That's amazing. Like, yeah.
Sure.
Pray. You're great. You're great. But I just wanted to think, like, how can I be the absolute opposite of that? Like, come in the store and we do coffee. We do have beer. We have a bar.
Sure.
We have like a, basically like a pub in there. And I was like, can people just come in and don't pay for it. Just have a beer, sit down, have a chat. Like, what's the most relaxing thing that British people could do is they go to a pub. Can I make a shop pub? And I'm not charging you for my beer. Come and have the beer. And then we'll talk about the clothes. It just so happens to be a place where we talk about clothes. And I think, like, I want people to feel like Percival's just their mate that they can just ask a question to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm always on the socials, and we had a sample sale the other day. I'm always down the queue just talking to everyone, or on the tills, or I go to the shop. I just think, like, I want people to feel comfortable about asking questions about how to dress better. And if they already know, then yeah, we can get into like the you know, the level up stuff.
Right.
You know, if you want to start talking about like other brands, vintage bits, the way the Reaver falls, the set in sleeve. Yeah, let's get into that. But so I think as menswear heads, we forget that we're like 1%, and like there's 99% who are just like, oh yeah, you're like Johnny Punisher t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, man, honestly, come and have a beer, Punisher. And I'll just show you some fundamentals that are going to change your life.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of the weird things of well, I guess good and bad things of some of the social media stuff. And so I used to be this kind of like celebrity stylist for a few different bigger dudes.
Yeah.
And yeah. Knowing how insecure they were, and because they're like, well, people view me as X. And if they knew the truth that I wasn't confident in this, which in a weird way, I think that's great now. Like we're at this part of this like generation where it's okay to admit that like you don't understand and you can learn, and people have this empathetic relationship towards you. And, but like now where you have social media stuff, it's like, hey, here's how to wear a suit. Here's how this thing should fit. Like, here's, you know, this is what drape means. Like the amount of people that are like, hey, you know what? Like, I don't want to, what does drape mean? You know, when they're just like, oh, like what's a British shoulder? What's canvas? All these different things that I think the anonymity of social media makes it easy to kind of live in that world. The same reason where, you know, the biggest Kindle book was that 50 Shades of Grey, because no one could see what you were reading if you held it, you know, if you read it in a fucking Kindle, you know, where it's like, hey, that's cool. I'm going to read this shit book. Like,
no one can see the fucking color.
Yeah. But I think about that a ton, because it just makes things, you know, I don't know. It's like Tom York wearing Rag and Bone, you know?
Mm.
It's because I bet he was just like, man, where do I get some like regular jeans? I don't want anyone to know that, like, you know, I'm going to kind of get this clown brand right now. I don't know. I think about that a lot.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I think that I don't know how it's like the influencer ecosystem for women is different to men. And it's the gap is closing because I have a few friends that do influencer stuff.
Yeah.
And one specifically, her ecosystem from wearing to buying for brands is so powerful. They see it, one click, they buy.
Right.
And with men's, I always sort of felt like, you know, men just don't shop like that. They just don't shop like that. And then so we didn't use influencers for a while, and a lot of them reach out and we would still gift, and we don't see like that immediate traction. And then we had this, I'm sure you know about this, Chris Evans wearing one of our knit shirts at the Buzz Lightyear premiere. And the amount of sales from that shirt alone almost immediately, and it's not paid, you know, this stylist Ilaria.
Yeah, Ilaria Urbanati, who's,
she's amazing. Like, she's just like an absolute tour de force. And it shows with like the huge clients that she has. And she has such a great eye. And, you know, she has this Italian heritage that we were talking about recently. And she put it on him, and we didn't know about it. And we just saw all these sales come through. And I was just trying to get my head into like, what guy is seeing that and going, that's for me? And I'm looking down the list, just this random segmentation of like Oklahoma, Nebraska, South Dakota. I'm like, I don't know America well, but I know those fucking places are not the epicenter of style and culture.
Yeah.
And like, again, at me all you want, but I just know it. Like, you're not wearing it, that you're seeing it on him and buying it, and you're just going, I buy that, I can be like him. Mm-hmm. And the mindset is like, it's bonkers. It's a powerful thing, that like that idolization part of it. I think at the time he was like sexiest man in the world by GQ.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. And it's funny too, because like, if you want to make money in the United States for clothes, sell to the Midwest, because the people on the coast, they're fickle. They're more like stubborn in some of their ways. There's, you know, I think there's more of an insecurity based around that. But it's like, when you look at brands, like, I mean, I've said this when I had the Buck Mason guys on, and I'm like, oh, they crush it, because dudes in Nashville and dudes in, Oklahoma and all these other places who have lots of money, because they, okay, I don't know, like repair houses, or they run like a plumbing empire or whatever sort of like blue collar job that hits like a 7-figure, you know, income, that they're just like, oh yeah. Like my, I've said this before, my brother-in-law would spend more on clothes than me, but never realized it, because one, he has more income and he just sees something and he just buys it. Like, it's just done. Like, for me, I'm just like, well, I kind of already have this. Could I get a discount? Should I hit this person up? What sort of connection? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's just like, the jacket costs this, I purchase it, done. And it's just like, oh, so that's how you really make money in the States. Like, you just hit up the Midwest and all these people are like, yeah, no problem, done. Stanley mugs, done.
Oh my God, Stanley mugs. You see, this woman the other day was like stopped and she like shoplifted like 115,000 worth of Stanley mugs in her car, whatever. Stanley mugs, I mean,
that's,
I remember
TikTok
this coming
thing
up in, yeah, it came up like 2 weeks ago and I was like, what do you mean Stanley mugs? And they're like, a mug by this brand, Stanley. And I was like, you mean like Stanley, like who do the knives? Well, I grew up in the 90s using craft knives to build like Warhammer figures with, what, that Stanley? And they're like, yeah, yeah, they made a mug, it went viral. I was like, wow, there's hope for us all.
It's like $500 million in sales off these fucking stainless steel mugs that are like ergonomic for your car, and they have a very large plastic straw, and you get them in different colors. But that's the thing, is like, people in the Midwest, they're just like, fuck yeah, I'll do it. You know, you penetrate Target, you look at all this stuff where it's just like, I mean, it's nuts. I don't know. Percival Midwest, do it.
Well, yeah, and I certainly think that like, men especially, they're like, they see and then they buy.
Yeah.
Like, I think because you know, we're part of a set of people who are probably super curatorial about what we like. But what we see in the data is, if it rains, guys like, I'll buy a rain jacket.
Yeah.
If it's sunny, they're like, short sleeve shirt. And I guess no one thinking about the fact that, I don't know, you might have a wedding coming up, or you might have a holiday in 5 weeks' time. They're like, day before, holiday, buy shirt. Like, that's just the men's head just does that. And I think, yeah, maybe the whole of the Midwest is just doing the same thing.
I mean, it's wild. And it's funny, a friend of mine, he works at a men's retail store, and they do suits. And he's like, oh, it's the spring, we always hit wedding season. And he's like, the biggest thing that we started trying to do was to buy production slots instead of basically like going to send it. Because the reason why we're able to get so much business is not because of their, like, the style or anything that's made. It's because these guys come in and they need a suit for their own wedding in less than 2 weeks. And he's like, I always ask them, like, when did you decide the dates? And they'd be like, oh, like 3 years ago. And it's like, so you waited till 2 weeks to get your own fucking suit for the wedding? And they're like,
dude, I can't handle the lack of planning. I can't handle it. She wants me to wear a suit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man.
It's, I don't know. I mean, I had my shit picked out like before I even was dating. I was like, fuck, I'm going to wear this sick navy suit, man. It's going to be dope.
So what have you gone for? What did you get married in?
I got married in a Tom Brown navy suit. This was like 2011. I was pretty nuts for Tom. I worked for them for a tiny bit. And this was like when a lot of the stuff was made by Rocco. It was next to the beggar's office.
Yeah, nice.
So,
yeah, nice.
You know, I helped them like get their e-com, or not their e-com, their CRM stuff set up. There was like, you know, maybe 6 dudes that were working for TB at the time. And I was just, you know, I bought the $1,500 trickers. I had like 6-7 different Tom Brown suits. You know, I carried a fucking Samsonite briefcase like an idiot.
You really role played, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's the only way to live at the time. I was just like, well, might as well.
Was it like a two button? Yeah. 2 button.
3 button.
And then what?
Yeah. 3-2 roll. All this stuff is basically 3-2 roll. Way too short.
Classic. So this is 2011. So it would have been maybe a touch too tight.
It was too tight. Yeah. And they told me, they were like, oh, well, if you're going to get married in this, because also I would wear it. You know, I wore my suit for like half a year before I got married. in it. Uh-huh. And the biggest thing that they did is they were like, well, if you're going to get married, why don't we change the suit up a bit? And so they took the suit back and I regret this, but they were like, you know, what do you want to do to make this a little bit more like festive for your wedding? And already I was like, we're not doing a tux because I just was like, I want to wear this a lot. And so they changed the buttons out to white buttons.
I was literally about to say, did they change the buttons to gold buttons, but white buttons?
All white. So I had a white buttons on the, you know, on the sleeves and chest and everything. And man, I thought I was hot shit. And then I had a Michael Bastian cutaway collar shirt and a like an old Brooks Brothers tie and double monk shoes.
But at the time, that is that what would have been the hot shit though, man.
Oh, yeah.
And if I did, yeah. And I bet I would have, you know, seen it on Instagram with some mad filter on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With like fake edges.
Caption, did a thing.
Did a thing. With loads of unnecessary hashtags. Yep. And do you know what? I would have gone, that guy's got it down.
Yeah. I was quite proud. I had I remember because Antonio Ciangoli, who I think he was at Michael Bastian at the time when he did this, or he was doing the Gantt stuff. Yeah, he was there and he had a, because I had all the groomsmen do navy jackets and chinos. And so I was like, look, can wear, like there's, you know, because also if, at least for us, like you got to kind of buy your own shit. And so I was like, you can get this Land's End canvas navy jacket for $100. Or if you want to go nuts, you know, Antonio went and had this like navy jacket made in Naples. And so, so he went all out. And it was like blue Oxford shirts, navy jacket. It looks like this kind of American prep thing, which I don't know. But now I have a Google Home and I see the fucking wedding pictures all the time and I just want to rip it out of the wall. So,
it's the memories, dude. Did you have wacky sock color?
No, I did do red socks a bunch because Michael Hill always wore red socks.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, did you do red socks?
Yeah.
But the red socks kind of back. I feel like Drake's always hitting up the red sock, the red accent cardigan. Was it single vent, double vent?
This was double vent.
So double's British. Isn't it? Single's more American.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what, dude? Own it. That was the coolest fucking thing you could have done, and you did it.
Well, I mean, thank you. We're still kicking. You know, lots of different marriage counseling over the years, but we're hanging out, two kids, figuring the shit out.
Hey, man, who isn't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's funny to see that stuff, because then right after that, I got way obsessed with Rick Owens, and I think...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You did a full U-turn.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I was working with Orlando Bloom on stuff, and he was super into Rick, and I was getting the Rick showroom discount, and so, you know, it was just nuts. It was dumb. But like, I think only now, and I've talked about this a bunch where it's like, I don't think anyone can like confidently settle into their style until you hit like close to your 40s, because you have to like go through all these different, you know, motions of like figuring out who you are the same way people do with music. You know, I mean, it's like, you might go back to it on occasion, but you're just not a confident human being unless you're some superhuman individual. But I don't really know anyone who's like that at a younger age.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think like when I used to put together sort of creative direction for myself for like a 6 to 8 months or for a year. I never had like a long-term vision literally until I turned 40 and something clicked and I was like, I just want to dress like a cool dad.
Yeah.
And what is that to me? That's like, how did Harrison Ford dress in the 90s? How did Ayrton Senna dress when he wasn't in the car? And like all these questions and put all these references together. And there was nothing in there that was contemporary. And I was like, that's it. That's why you need the gene. You need that gene for life. Just own that gene.
Yeah.
You need that like plaid shirt that you've just worn forever. And it's just like, it's so fucking cool. I tell you who does this. You know Aaron Levine?
Yeah. Aaron does great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a nice guy. And what he's doing with Madewell Men's at the moment is great. Like it has to be a bit more fashion, but he's like, guys, just do you've got to just do these things in the silhouette, the classic stuff. I met him just randomly in New York. Like I'd known of him for ages, probably followed him on Instagram, all that stuff. We'd had a few chats and then he just came into the New York store and I was on my way out to get like a whatever. And he just appeared at the door and I was like, whoa. And he sat down, chat for a couple of hours. And I was like, man, that guy is just the guy. And just the way he's just like dad core, just owns it, wears it, lives life. And that's what I want to make. That's what I'm making. And I think like, I don't know.
No, I mean, I think you're dead on. I mean, Aaron's definitely a very, very good example of that because he's also in a good way, like I think some of it is because he doesn't live in New York, even though he's there all the time working with all the different brands that he works with, to where it's like you kind of get this. It's tough to do the New York fits if you don't live in New York. And so it kind of helps you, you know, bring your style back down to things that are a little bit more wearable. I mean, I don't know. I think that stuff helps. And then also Aaron is just salt of the earth, good dude. Like he's been in all the ups and downs that he's just like every day. He's like, man, I'm just glad that people are hiring me. And I'm like, dude, you're incredible. You're super talented. And he's I'm always just, and I'm like, all right, come on. But it's that feeling.
He's like the definition of timeless. I think doing something timelessly is very difficult. And even like he could be 22, he could be 55.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know how old you are.
That fucking beard, man.
Yeah, exactly. He can hide. How long have you, he could be from the Victorian times. I don't know how old the guy is. He could be 200 years old, but just timeless. Doing timeless well is difficult. And I love a difficult brief. So I'm all about timeless these days.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So what are the other things you do to keep you a little bit more grounded? Like what's your got a day off and you're not doing anything personal. What do you do?
Man, I'm cooking.
Cooking? Okay.
Cooking, yeah. Because I think when you're doing Percival, firstly, it's like the hours are insane. It's all encompassing.
Yeah.
You're doing like short-term thinking, long-term thinking. So switching those mindsets is stressful. You're doing creative like processing, and then you're doing strategic stuff, and then you're doing finance stuff, and then you're doing like development stuff, which is putting out fires. Everyone here is great and they have their role and they're doing it, but I'm in all of it because you have to be. And then you're talking to investors. Like right now, we're raising money. Investment stuff. So like, it's always something. And when I go home, like it used to be DIY, like we just renovated a house and then I kind of gave up because it was so much effort. But I love building things. It's just my hands making things. So the next level down is like cooking. And I'm just very lucky that my wife, who's from Iceland, happens to just be an amazing cook. And like, I've known her for like 15 years or something now. And so she raises the bar all the time. Mm-hmm. She frustratingly can go to the fridge and be like, we've got some rocket, a lemon, a fucking half a piece of cheese. So she could just then whip up something. And that always wound me up when I can't do things. I'm like, man, I've got to get some skills down. So I've gone down the route of, which is classic dad stuff, crafting different curries.
Okay.
So I love my Pacific Asian food, like Vietnamese, Lao, Thailand. I love all of that. So like, I'm always grinding spices, toasting spices, grinding them down using the pressure cooker for like 4 hours. Yeah, I love it. I love crafting a proper curry.
Oh, wow.
To the point where now, if I go to like a Thai restaurant, I'm one of those absolute fucking wankers who goes, I could cook this better.
Yeah, it's like someone's like 200-year-old recipe and you're like, this is awful. This is horrendous. Yeah, I could do this so much better. Give me my pressure cooker here. We got this.
Yeah. Listen, I know they've got a Thai mum in the kitchen who's probably handed this down through four generations, but no. That's out of the way. Out of the way, mum.
Cooking.
I'll get behind your stove.
That's a final frontier. I mean, so my wife and I, because we both work, we'll trade meals. It's like, okay, I'll let you got this dinner this night. You got this thing, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And I mean, I love to cook. We renovated our kitchen a couple of years ago. And it's crazy when you're like, oh, I have all this space now. I mean, we did the whole open floor plan like every other goofball. And so, you know, you have all this like space to like cook. And we got a giant like butcher block, like knife table to where you can just chop shit up all day. It's great, you know? And then there's this app I use. It's like one of the only apps that we love called Paprika. And it lets you skim. I mean, sorry, New York Times cooking or whatever. But it lets you skim all of these websites and it just pulls the recipe. So you know how like you go to somebody's website and it's like,
you're scrolling down for hours and there's
with
ads
all these
and you're
ads,
like, just.
Yeah. And it's like, they tell you the
recipe's
story.
Up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the method is right down there.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, what was in the marinade?
Yeah.
And then scrolling back. Yeah.
So this is no free ads or anything, but it just yanks all that stuff out. And so then.
Mate, that's amazing.
Yeah. And so, and it's got little conversion tables for your, you know, cause I'll yank something from like a British site and I'm like, I don't fucking understand the metric system. And so I'm like, geez, I don't know, you know.
Dude, the metric system just, it's divided by 10. It's so much easier.
I agree.
I get to a US site and they're like, it's 12 eighths of a cup. I'm like, what? Just tell me how many grams it is. What the fuck is going on with these guys?
I agree. I mean, I wish we did it. That's my, if I ever went political, man, I would, That'd be my thing, is we would adopt the metric system. And but it's, you just, we're fucked. So whatever.
You'd have an NRA on you. We measure our guns in inches, son.
This is true. This is true. That I'd get, next thing you know, some sort of like anti-support or whatever. What about music? What do you listen to these days?
So because it's been quite stressful this past couple of weeks, I always default, whenever I get stressed, I default back into just listening to Chet Baker.
Okay. Shoot some heroin. Because, there you go.
Well, yeah. I mean, and how weird that the sound is like, the antithesis of what he was and what his life was like, and how it's such a sad,
chaotic drug addict. God rest his soul. Yeah.
But then it's like, my funny Valentine. You're like, wow. And I love holding those two things. I do find it just extremely relaxing, to be honest. Because also I'm with my kid all the time in the car and she's like, can you put on the Trolls soundtrack? And it's just, it's tough when you got a kid in the car, you know? And you get your Spotify Wrapped and it's like, How to Train Your Dragon theme, Trolls, Pokemon intro, and then it's your songs. And then you're like, I can't post any of this because,
Dude, I quit Spotify solely for that reason. Because my kid learned how to use, we have this like Google Home or whatever. And she'll be like, hey, blank, play me, you know, Taylor Swift, whatever. And it'd be like all my Wrapped was like Moana. And Disney stuff and Frozen. Yeah.
Mate, she's jacking up your metrics in the wrong way.
Yeah, she is. And so I was like, well, I can't get rid of her. So I just switched to Tidal.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that in years. Is that still a thing?
It is. Well, because I use this like DAC, which is like a digital audio converter. So I can listen to shit high res. So I will listen to like lossless Van Halen and like lossless, you know, Stone, so I can hear, you know, them trip over bottles or whatever dumb shit they were doing when they were recording.
They've gone in so hard.
Yeah, it's
that's
ridiculous.
Amazing though.
Yeah, I have this bad addictive personality. I don't know how to understand anything unless I fully submerge myself into it. To where it's like, well, maybe I should read the book about how this was recorded. And, maybe I should learn about, you know, what was going on in their minds. Oh, like now I can really relate because this song was like a fuck you to Reagan. Okay, I get it. You know, and I'm just like, what am I doing? Yeah.
Do you ever unpack to a point where it like ruins the magic?
Yes, everything.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a good way, you realize that at the end of the day, you know, everyone is like pretty broken and is finding some way to be validated by, you know, a paternal relationship that went wrong, to where you're like, dang, like this whole person's life was because their dad just like wasn't chill. And you're like, okay, I get it. Like, I totally get it. And like that becomes this great way to connect with people. But I think it does take away some of the mystique when you think that some of these people are like supernatural musicians, you know, or artists that were like beamed down from heaven or something. When it's like, no, this dude just like had a drug addiction.
And knew the sort of maths behind how to make sounds work in a nice melodic order.
Yeah, I mean, basically. But I have that all the time. I mean, especially with clothing designers and any, you know, I mean, because you realize that like at the end of the day, these are also businesses, you know? And so when you think, you know, when people talk about like Ralph Lauren or this or that, like, I think the more you understand the reality behind the decisions that are made, you can, you can just like feel more connected to them. You're like, oh, so you did this because you were running out of money and you did this to save your business and it worked. And now you can get back to what you're the most known for, you know, whether that's art or, you know, and I think when you find out, like I got really into Edward Hopper for years. And when you found out the dude basically was just like an illustrator at like an ad agency who just kind of like sucked and was down in the dumps. And his wife was the one who basically like made his career in terms of helping him get more notoriety and protecting his, you know, what he did and what he wouldn't do in terms of like art and commissions, and really like nurtured him a ton. It's kind of beautiful, you know, and it made me feel more connected to that art.
It's hard. It's so hard to balance that commercial need to run a business and then the creative itch that you want to scratch.
Yeah.
That you have. And I mean, I think it's that constant tension. Like I love unpacking creative process. And like, I found that especially in uni, right, you were just designing stuff on computers and it just kept annoying me. I was like, how, like I'm making all this stuff and no one ever sees it. Like there's something intangible about digital digitalization of stuff. It's on screens and it's gone. It just disappears. Where does it go? And so as a student, it would wind me up. And I was luckily, my first year, I was in Bristol UE, which is in sort of Portishead, where mm-hmm. the band is from. And they had this amazing, it's called like the print room, essentially. And it looked over like a deer reserve. And I got to just, you got shown the facilities. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I'm spending my whole time in this place. And you could do, it wasn't just like lino cutting. Mm-hmm. They had a screen print set up. And the guy, old school guy, had been running it for years. He's probably still running it now. And he just would teach you how to do screen printing, but he would look down on you like an old, like a ramen master. He was just like, you better fucking learn the ropes in this screen printing room.
Yeah.
And he just scared everyone off apart from me. I was like, man, I've got to learn this process of screen printing, where you can only use a limited number of colors. It's very labor intensive. Really, I was like, man, I can only use two colors here. And it made me a better designer. And then in the letter pressing place, and you learn about sliding the tiny bits of like lead until they changed it to brass. And you slide these bits of brass in between. And then you start to understand that books were letter pressed by hand for like decades, and you're like, oh, I get why letters look like that and are spaced like that.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about you learn about the text rivers, how on negative space on certain characters looks like there's a big white space between them, so you can't set them at the same distance because it just looks like it's a separate word. And like just learning the manual processes from scratch, I had to like, then in my second year, that's when I went to Hong Kong. It was purely digital. I really missed the manual side of it. But then I was like, okay, I feel way more comfortable designing on a computer because I just had understood how that was built up. And that's why now with Percival, come back to like all the craft-based stuff. Can't help but get back into that. That's like embroidery. There's an artist we work with called Sophie Hollington, lives in Brighton. She does everything lino cut. It's amazing. And then it gets turned into a screen print and da 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 da. And everyone's like, she just drawn that on Illustrator. You're like, nah, she's fucking cut that out. Like I just, but yeah, and when you start unpacking that stuff and you get to the bottom of it, you're like, okay, where do I go? Okay, I've just got to go straight back up again to where I came from.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, like understanding where things really come from, you get a better way to create. I mean, versus a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, I just learned, I don't know, like I learned Photoshop and I learned layers. Mm-hmm. And so, and I, you know, learned the clone stamp and I became this artist. In a way, it's kind of cool the same way when people didn't have, because I always like associate this to music, when, you know, a lot of the garage rock and stuff like that, that came in, it wasn't because that like they were specifically going for that sound. They were limited by the resources and tools to make their art. And so you're like, oh, this is cool, yeah. You know, but like when you understand, you know, like getting into the Beach Boys and the Beatles and it, like you realize this stuff comes back to like Bach, you're like, oh shit. Like, oh, these harmonies come from this, or like perfect thirds and fifths that were like dictated by the fucking Pope, you know, because it was a holy harmony and it made you closer to God. And you're just like, what? And God, you know, there's stuff there that I think really does help give you an appreciation. And that same thing comes back when, you know, you look at like Rick Owens patterns and you're like, yeah, this is an incredibly difficult pattern that's cut and how it flows to this person. And I don't know, but like, I think about that, more than ever.
You're right. That's all over menswear and womenswear in fashion. You know, the raglan sleeve is the best example of something that was deconstructed to work better for, was it Lord Raglan who put the seam from the underside of the underarm to the high neck point so they could,
you're wearing a raglan sleeve. Yeah,
so they could draw a rifle quicker.
Yeah.
Because the set-in sleeve and all of its like padding and stuff was just awkward to draw the rifle in battle. And you're like, wow, that is the first sports thing ever someone's ever invented. Like, it's just ergonomics.
Yeah.
And like, it's still called the raglan sleeve. Like, that, and all of fashion is that. It's all coming from somewhere. It's all from somewhere. And like, it's just how obviously do you wear your references?
Yeah.
And I think like when references are too obvious, people get fucking torn to shit. But if a reference is obscure enough, people are like, they're a genius.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Do you get more optimistic about fashion when you see things like people like Pharrell making Louis Vuitton, or do you get more pessimistic?
I feel like it's just changing and it's not for me. If you think about those luxury fashion houses, even 30 years ago, they would have been owned by families who did luxury stuff as a family business and had a cohort of extremely rich people that would come through by word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hermes, is Hermes the last family owned one potentially?
Yeah, but they're not, I mean, they're not majority family owned. The LVMH, they've been slowly buying shares, you know, over the years. Yeah.
And so when you think about LVMH, what is their goal? is to make money.
Yeah.
And so now if they're trying to cross-pollinate multiple regions that they want to get huge fucking sales from, which is probably like parts of the Middle East, parts of Asia, parts of Russia, probably a cohort of Europeans and some Americans as well.
Yeah.
Who can you put in place that's both satisfies a Western demographic, does all the tip boxing, is creative, has a cohort of millions of followers at the same time, and can export? Then it's a perfect choice to make. From a business point of view, they've probably absolutely nailed the brief.
Yeah.
Can he design? It doesn't even matter.
Yeah,
Pharrell, though, happens to probably be a very creative guy who understands references, loves fashion, has always been in the fashion space, da 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 da. But he's kidding himself if he thinks that's the reason he's got the job.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think I saw, yeah, I've seen some of the show. It looks good. It's like Western inspired, right? And yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. It's just fine. I'm not going to buy it. It's not for me, but I know exactly who it is for. And so is that disingenuous for them to do? Probably, but that's definitely not the future of menswear or fashion, is it? It's like Aurélie, Le Maire, you know, people who just have a platform, have been recognized, and are now just crafting and crafting. It's always going to be those guys coming through that get bought out and eventually probably get diluted and torpedoed, and then a new bunch of people will come through. And so how long can LVMH hang on to those old principles and keep recycling it? I'm not sure how much of the new generation of people will have the money and the time. I don't know. I don't know how long, like I'm talking like over decades, it's got, and what they're going to do. You know, like great example of people shifting really quickly was like NFTs.
Oh my God.
Everyone.
You remember
like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, Adidas NFT. I swear to God, everyone had an NFT, and my investor was like, if you don't have an NFT, Chris, you'll fucking be a left behind. And I'm just like, I just swear it's not the thing. So Pharrell, sure. He's probably doing exactly what they need him to do.
Yeah. That's dead on. So that being said, then what's your multi-year Percival plan? You don't see yourself selling to LVMH anytime soon?
Depends. I don't want to be a starving artist, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you want to take care of your family and cook and make a living.
Yeah,
exactly, I get it. It's fair.
I'd like to just probably, I would like to exit eventually, but Percival is not, I am deliberately commercial about a lot of things. And so I think like people will see it, or investors or people who would want to buy it eventually will see the data, the customer data. They'll see the repeat customers. They'll see the average order value. So they're looking at that. And I think like the brand value, like I love the brand and I'll make it. But if I ever sell it, fuck it, I'll sell it. And then I'll just start something else and start again. And probably if I had money, then I could be even more annoying about what I want it to be like. And I can just make things by hand. And I would love to just sit and make things by hand the whole day and make one offs and two offs and five offs and just be a real asshole about it. But I just, yeah, like you said, I got a kid who will only eat food if it's in the shape of a cat head. So I like
yeah.
I've got time.
No, hear you. I think about that all the time. Like there's this really good Paul McCartney quote, which love him or hate him. People were like, oh, you know, what are you going to do? And, you know, this Beatles song, it wasn't owned by you. And how are you going to do this? And how are you going to do this? And he's like, look, at the end of the day, no one can take away from, you know, just my creative outlet. And he's like, I can just write another song. I can just, you know, like it, basically the concept was like, as an artist, not being so attached to your output and realizing that you'll always be an artist. And so it's never about what you create. It's about the fact that you can. And I think about that so much.
100%. I've always thought that. Like, people always rip each other off all the time. Like, Percival has done some bits. People have stolen it. And everyone's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Like, what are you going to sue him?
Sue him.
It's like, nah. So let him have it. If you can't make something new,
yeah,
don't worry. And that's when it changed. Like, you know, Nike is suing everyone for the Flyknit technology.
Oh, Jesus.
And they're suing like all birds, and they're suing everyone who's ever knitted anything and put it on a shoe. And I'm just like, huh. I mean, that is just proves exactly what they're about.
Yeah. I saw Levi's is suing Brunello Cucinelli for the tab. And it's like, really? The fucking tab? Heads up, guys. Yeah. You're going to have to figure something else out. Get out the lasers on your jeans or whatever you're going to do. But
Mm, mm.
Let's exactly. Anyone can take the tab.
Exactly. And that's when it's just not about craft in any way, shape or form, no matter what you say. Trying to protect my interest, protect my IP. But it's like, man, don't worry.
Yeah.
Just, and there's another one, you know, what was it? Tom Brown, the Tom Brown four stripe, was it on the sleeve?
Yeah. Well, because here's the thing. It used to be two stripes and then it was three stripes. And I remember I had Tom Brown, you know, Locky cashmere cardigans that were three stripes. And
wow, you were a three stripe era.
I had it. Oh yeah, fuck yeah. I had the two and the three. And then they switched to four to, you know, because like the Adidas thing has been going back and forth for years.
Yeah.
You know, and Adidas was like, hey, cut it out. And they're like, all right, well, fuck you. We'll just add another stripe. Done.
Fast forward 10 years, there's like seven stripes and it's still going on.
Well, and the funny thing was early on, and I do not know this for a fact. I'm air quoting there to protect my ass. Thanks for the errors and omissions insurance that we have now. But they were like, look, fine, you can do this, but you can't make athletic wear. And Tom Brown was just like, yeah, of course not. We're not going to make athletic wear. Who the fuck wants that? Meanwhile, the biggest demand when they were purchased by the Japanese company, I think it was Cross or whatever it was at the time. They were like, we want sweatpants. And they were like, shit, how do we do this? Because we need to circumvent any sort of Adidas thing. We can't really make athletic wear. And they're like, we'll just make this, we'll call it like tailored whatever. And so they did it and it was fine. And then Adidas came back around again. They're like, hey, you're making athletic wear. You can't really do it. You know, but it's like, really? Tell me the person who walked in and was like, I'm looking for Adidas. Oops, I accidentally spent 700X and I got Tom Brown. Like, it just doesn't happen. It's so silly.
Is it the 30-pound sweatpant or is it the 500-pound wool everyday easy wear trouser?
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Column A, column B are pretty different, I'd say.
Yeah. So anyway, I digress. Chris, great to meet you. Thanks so much for coming on, man. We'll see you.
Mate, Jeremy, loved it. Good to see you, man. Hopefully see you soon. I'll come to New York.
Yeah. All right. You've been listening to Blammo. Our show is produced by Blammo Media. We're edited by Amar Lowell and our theme music, as always, by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. If you like what you heard, you know the drill. Share the pod with a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars or thumbs up on whatever other thing you're listening to us on, whether it's Dingledorp or Bing Bong, whatever it's called. But you can also follow us on Instagram for all the hot content. If you want to talk to us and give us your hot take, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email at info@blammopod.com. Last but not least, super ultra important. If I had an air horn, I would press it right now. You got to come and join us over on Patreon because the fun never stops over there. Look, the live show, the free show, whatever you want to call this, we take breaks here and there, but Patreon, it never stops. And we also got exclusive shows like Die Workwear, hosted by Derek Guy and Peter Zatolo, and the Triple J Show, hosted by yours truly with John Moy and Gene DeLeon. There's just a ton of stuff over there. So check it out at patreon.com/Blammo. If not, no worries. We got hundreds and hundreds of free episodes in the feed and more to come. So we will see you all soon.